Hello, this is the Unplugged Mom, Lorette Lynn, and I am here to talk you out of your comfort zone. And I'm going to do a very good job of that today because I have a guest that is going to help us break free of our connection and our dependence and our addiction to the status quo. And I'm going to tell you how we're going to do that. So let's go ahead and introduce our guest without further wasting of time. I have with me today Jan Ervin. Jan Ervin is an author, researcher. He specializes in trivium ideology, trivium education, teaching the trivium, and learning via the trivium concept. He's going to tell us about what the trivium is and answer some more questions that I personally have, and I'll tell you more about that in a minute. Jan is also a speaker and the founder of GnosticMedia.com, and he hosts Gnostic Media Podcast. Most of us are familiar somewhat with Jan's work, even if we don't know it, because we have heard of trivium education. We may not know exactly what it is. We may have some questions. It may be a little bit feeble in our mind right now, but we're going to get right to it and we're going to explore what the concept of trivium is. And I'm going to also explore a little bit. And, you know, audience, if you've been listening to me for any time, which most of you have, you know that I have gone over this before, the dangers of media influence and how this has affected our lives as a culture and how it has helped to shape us in a negative way as a culture and turn us into what has been called obedient consumers, obedient consumers. And I've coined that phrase from John Taylor Gatto, actually, who I had the pleasure of interviewing a while ago, and we talked about how our culture has been dumbed down over the past several decades of indoctrinated and compulsory mandatory education, and how this is actually a very purposeful agenda. But how does media play a role in this? Now, we've had different guests on, and we've talked to a lot of the radical unschooling population or kind of new age population who would suggest that, oh, it's just hogwash and it's nothing and you're just going off on a tangent and we don't want to be afraid of TV and we learn by playing video games and, you know, this is all okay. And, I try to take it a step deeper because that's why I'm here, audience. That's why I'm here, my friends, to try to unplug you from your way of thinking and this compulsory, indoctrinated way of thinking. Now, am I saying that it's brainwashing? Am I saying that it's dangerous? You know, I'm going to leave that up to you to decide, but what I'm here to do is get you to think. I'm not here to tell you what to think. I'm here to urge you to think. And the problem is that some of us just don't know how to think anymore. It's been trained right out of us. It's been schooled right out of us. And has that been on purpose? Does that then make us vulnerable to more media influence? Let's find out. Let's connect with Jan. Hello, Jan. How are you? It's great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Lorette. I'm happy to be here, and I'm doing quite well. Thank you. And I'm glad to hear that you guys have had Gatto on your show as well. He's made three appearances on my show.
Oh, he's fantastic.
Yeah, he's great. So it's great to know that your audience already has that foundation. I just wanted to add real quick that since we're going to be talking about primarily the trivium today, the trivium teaches us how to think, not what to think. So that goes along with what you were just saying.
Yeah, indeed. And that's why I find myself jiving with it so well. When I first started to read about trivium and learn about it, it really resonated with me and it made me smile in the way that I was kind of already there. It is our family philosophy. It is the way we help our children learn in my house. That is kind of who we are anyway. I will not consider myself very well versed in the trivium theory or the trivium concept. And that's why we have you here today. And then we're going to have Jarrett Sanchez on in a couple of weeks. That's going to talk a little bit more about practical application once we get the general concept of what trivium is. But I will say that just from what I've been able to find out, I resonate with it so well because it's kind of where we already are. And that's exactly it, Jan. That sums it up for me. I'm all about thinking and not being told what to think, but being able to form our own conclusions. Now, it's my theory that this ability has actually been schooled out of us over the last several decades. And if you know anything about me or the show, you know that I'm a big supporter of independent education and independent learning without school. And I have been known to trash the school system and actually accuse the school system of indoctrinating our entire culture over the last several decades. And I have blamed it. I do call the school system the root of many of our problems in society, because I feel that school is a training center that uses selected and controlled information and keeps the population's knowledge very limited and focused. We know only what they want us to know, and therefore we're unable to really make informed critical decisions because we're conditioned to behave compulsively and not to think. And this, of course, makes us more vulnerable. Now, how does the trivium concept differ from that? And what are your thoughts on all that?
Well, the trivium, let me back up a step. You know, the modern education system was developed by Carnegie and Rockefeller and J.P. Morgan and the wealthy elites to create good factory workers and soldiers that would follow orders without question, be team players, that sort of thing, not want to go out and run their own business or do these sorts of things. So the school system is, as you said, it's the foundation of how they do everything. The way that modern advertising works, the way that the modern legal system, the political system, television, even video games, the way that they market these things to us today would not have worked in the 1900s, because the average person, or many people at least, had this critical thinking far more on average per capita of the population than today. Like, if you go in and you read the letters from the Civil War from soldiers writing home to their families, they are surprisingly articulate compared to your average person today, with a vocabulary that's far more expansive than ours today.
Indeed.
Let me just say, though, also that, you know, what the trivium does is you know, a lot of people will have parts of this already innate in their thinking. What the trivium does is, if you don't have it set as a system already, it takes it, or if you might have an inclination of these things, like you were saying that when you came across it, it just, you know, it made so much sense to you. You got it right away. Well, many of us already have like an implicit knowledge of something, but what you're doing and what you're bringing to your audience by laying this information out is giving them explicit knowledge, mm-hmm. so that now they'll be able to identify everything and exactly how it works. So rather than just having that feeling or that idea, now they can identify it explicitly.
Well, that's exactly the point here. And, you know, I'm going to just back up one second when you mentioned the difference in language. There has been a bastardization and a grotesque malforming of the English language over the last 100 years. And I suspect that this was not only on purpose, but this has to do with the large media influence that we've had and the dumbing down of America through indoctrinated schooling. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I agree with you. It just so happens that I'm holding in my hands here a book that is called Less Than Words Can Say by Richard Mitchell, that is a book on this exact topic. And, you know, and we all use them, even those of us who consider ourselves well-educated. We use, like, when we're chatting online or texting, you know, on our phones, we'll send LOL for laughing out loud, or laughing my, you know, whatever off, or all of these different types of things, rolling on the floor, laughing out loud, all these different things. This is the continuous, basically, dumbing down of our language and our proper grammar and expression between each other. It's like, well, we could use Eric Blair or George Orwell's example in 1984. It's the, what's the term that he used? Newspeak. You know, where every year they're removing words from the dictionary and dumbing down the population. And you know, George Orwell, and his book was very prophetic, because, you know, in the 1940s, he could see how technology and these things could be used against us. But what he got wrong is that, you know, you didn't need a a TV in your apartment that stared back at you or anything like that, because today we all have computers and cell phones that do that for us, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he couldn't even imagine that everyone would have a full powered computer system in their pockets.
Sure.
So that's the state of reality today.
Well, you know what? I'm going to offer some comments on this because it's a personal pet peeve that I have. And I've talked about this before publicly, and I've written it about it as well. And I do get a lot of argument from people. And it's just a pet peeve that I have that even when you're online and even when you're communicating online, and I will admit that I have used phraseology like LOL or, you know, OMG or things like that, especially in texting, because you do only have the 140 characters there. But that's another thing, like using things like Twitter and using things like texting, it really does over time condition us to shorten our language. And by shortening our language, we're inadvertently shortening our capacity to think through what we're saying. And we're rushing to say what we have to say. And we're rushing to tweet it out all over the place because we need everybody to know what we want to say. And not that I don't use Twitter. I do. I think it can be a useful tool. But I think like any other tool, there is the potential to overuse it. And that's when it becomes intellectually detrimental to ourselves as individuals, and then thus to us as a culture. Now, another pet peeve that I have is when people email me online and they send me messages, they will not capitalize. They don't even capitalize their own name. They don't punctuate correctly. The grammar is atrocious. And, you know, I've been known to make the mistake of ending a sentence in a preposition here or there, but we're talking about just improper sentence structure. And I'm saying to myself, you're writing to me and this is what you're saying. Now, Jan, what this has to do, in my opinion, with teaching the trivium is the trivium actually, it's based on Pythagorean theory and it incorporates grammar, logic, and rhetoric in that order.
There's two different ones there. There's Aristotle's and then there's Pythagoras. And those are two different systems. The Aristotle one is the trivium and Pythagoras was the quadrivium.
Okay.
The trivium is based on Aristotle specifically, the quadrivium is Pythagoras. Let me ask you though, specifically, did you hear my show last week with Scott Onstott regarding the quadrivium at the beginning of that? And it just reminded me of this because there's this comedian, Lee Camp, that I've started putting on the beginning of some of my shows. And he did a 4-minute sketch on people's issues with spelling and how people have been so systematically dumbed down. Leo Tolstoy said that the printing press is a mighty engine for disseminating ignorance. Okay, so what that means is that unless you have a systematic method for deciphering and filtering the information coming into you via the five senses, that you have the ability to be manipulated. So just being able to read isn't what stops ignorant behavior. It's having a systematic method installed, a mental antivirus system installed into your brain that teaches you how to spot the BS as it's coming in, how to spot false logic, false conclusions, how to figure out if a sentence structure is correct, how, you know, all of these things are what is composed of the what is known as the trivium.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me explain for a second. Your audience is probably wondering what the trivium is.
Yeah, they're hanging on with bated breath right now. So let's go ahead and get right into it.
For those of your listeners who want to follow along, they can go to my website, triviumeducation.com. That's TRIVIUM education.com.
Before you start, I'm sorry for interrupting you, but before you start, I just want to clarify, I would consider you right now the person to speak to and the person to learn from about Trivium Education, but is it your brainchild?
No, it's not my brainchild. I passed the buck up to Gene Odenning, who taught me, and Gene was taught the Trivium by others above him, and it's been passed down for thousands of years, basically.
Okay. Now I'm going to give you my understanding. Correct me if I'm wrong. And then I'm going to give you the floor so you can go ahead and explain to the audience what the Trivium Education concept is. And then we're going to move on to my deeper questions. My basic understanding, and this is why I said it resonated with me, because when I was able to really visualize what was going on here, I realized that we're kind of already doing this anyway. I just didn't know that we were doing it. So that's actually good news for me.
Implicit versus explicit.
Pretty much, yeah. We have the trivium, okay, which can be described as the triangle being with the points 5, 3, and 4 being senses, trivium, and quadrivium. And that brings us to the quadrivium, which includes math, geometry, music, and astronomy, which was the Pythagorean. This all includes the what we would consider today to be classical education, which is the seven liberal arts. So when we take this approach to learning, this is pretty much the trivium education. So can you tell me if I'm wrong and go ahead and elaborate?
Well, you had a couple minor errors in there, which will be covered as we go here. But the trivium itself is the first part, and the trivium is always in this specific order. To take any of what I'm giving you out of order is a system of mind control in and of itself. So the trivium is always grammar first, logic second, and rhetoric third. And grammar is who, what, where and when of a subject, and it's also known as knowledge, and it's discovering and ordering the facts of reality comprises basic systematic knowledge. And it's not only the rules developed and applied to ordering to the ordering of word concepts for verbal expression and communication, but for our first contact with conscious order as such. It is the initial self-conscious technique used in properly, discursively, or sequentially organizing a body of knowledge from raw factual data for the purpose of gaining understanding through logic and thus also organizing the individual human mind. It is the foundation upon which all other methods of organization are and order are built. And grammar falls under two parts, which is special grammar that relates to specific words and punctuation, etc., of a specific language like Russian or Latin or English. There's general grammar that relates to the words of objective reality in any language and applies to all subjects, such as the first building blocks to integrate fully and mindfully objective knowledge. So, in other words, like words are built of letters, okay, and thoughts are built of words. So, when we look outside at the world around us, we see tree, bird, house, car, these types of things. These are the general grammar of reality. The special or specific grammar gets down to the letters and actual punctuation. So that's the difference between the two. Now, grammar should also be understood of stood as research. Okay, you're gathering all of your research and your data, and you're bringing it together, and you're saying, okay, these are all the things that I'm dealing with, whether they're letters and punctuation marks for building a word in a sentence, or whether it's bricks to build a building, or car or parts to build a car, or a model airplane, or whatever it may be, or to write a report. So the first thing that we always do is our grammar. And grammar is pulling all of that data together, okay? And then after we go through the grammar, we get to logic, and logic answers the why of a subject. And it's developing the faculty of reason and establishing valid, or i.e., non-contradictory relationships among facts yields basic systematic understanding. And it's a guide for thinking correctly, thinking without contradiction. It is the art of non-contradictory identification, as Ayn Rand put it. Now, interestingly, Ayn Rand, the reason why she got herself in trouble and so many people dislike her work today is that she had her grammar and her logic out of order. She put logic first. She tried to come to conclusions before gathering the proper data and fact-checking it. Okay, so this is a common problem. It's not that her philosophy and her logic is bad. It's that because she didn't do enough data gathering, she came to false conclusions. So by knowing that, you can actually go through her work and gain a lot of valid information from her research, from her philosophy and her logic, just being careful of her conclusions.
This is actually very interesting because I'm a fan of Ayn Rand and I have read her work and I enjoyed her work very much and I'm compelled now, having learned what I'm learning from you, to go back and reread her philosophy and her work and try to recognize
Well,
what you're saying here.
if you read her book of Philosophy, Who Needs It, the opening chapter is a speech that she's giving at West Point. And you can tell that she's using all of this rah-rah America's number one rhetoric. She never realized that the Soviet Union and communism, the Bolshevik Revolution, was a Zionist dialectic to face up against capitalism, and it was intentionally created, propped up, and funded by the United States. She didn't realize all of these things, so she came to improper conclusions, thinking that, you know, this false idea, this false appeal to authority of this John Galt figure, this mm-hmm. hero man to come and rescue us all. She basically believed that this rich, elite, wealthy person should be given all power and authority to make all these decisions for everybody else. And that's the fallacy of appeal to authority. So because she didn't do enough research on the foundations of the United States and England and the elites and the Bolshevik Revolution and Zionism and things like this, not having read, like, for instance, Douglas Reed's work or Anthony Sutton's work or Professor Carol Quigley's work and people like that, she did not have all of the pieces of the puzzle to come to proper conclusions.
And this is a problem in our society.
Oh, yes. Well, it certainly is.
This is a pandemic.
It absolutely is. So this is what we're doing now, is we're trying to create a meme of the Trivium to get it back out into society, because it's basically been removed since probably about the 1850s. And that's when they started to remove it. And then it was mostly eradicated by the 1920s and 30s, you know, and still survived in little pockets. I still get emails maybe once every couple of months from professors around the country at different colleges and universities that say, aha, you know, the Trivium, and I had no idea how, you know, what else I could use it for, and thank you so much. And, you know, so there are little pockets of the Trivium surviving out there today. Describing logic, which logic, again, is the why of a subject. It's systematic understanding. It is a guide for thinking correctly, thinking without contradiction. It is the art of non-contradictory identification. The grammar, you identify everything that you're dealing with. Okay, so that's grammar. But logic, you're removing the contradictions in those identifications. So that is why logic is the art of non-contradictory identification. And that's what differentiates it from grammar, in that grammar is just bringing all of these things together and saying, okay, this is a screw, this is a letter, this is an A, this is a comma, or whatever you're dealing with, okay? Whether it's building a ship or a house or building a sentence structure. The work of logic is proof. Proof consists of establishing the truth and validity of a concept or proposition in correspondence with objective factual reality by following a self-consistent chain of higher-level thought back down to foundational primary concepts or axioms, existence, consciousness, and causality. It is a means of keeping in touch and grounded to objective reality in our search for valid knowledge and understanding. Logic brings rhythm of the subjective thoughts of the mind and the subsequent actions of the body into harmony with the rhythm of the objective universe. The intention is to amicably synchronize individual mental processes and their attendant actions with the processes of our surrounding natural factual existence over a period of a lifetime. Now, going back to the Pythagorean right-sided triangle, the five of the Pythagorean triangle is the five senses. And then the three of that is the trivium, and then the four of that is the quadrivium. So these, just like the trivium has to be in a specific order, the Pythagorean triangle, the trivium and quadrivium are taught in a specific order. All of this stuff builds on the last. So,
and it's important that it's all in the correct order.
Right. It's very important that it's in the correct order. See, now when I was in junior high school, for instance, after I learned basic mathematics, I was taught algebra. Now, who the heck would teach algebra after mathematics? Whoever did that to me really screwed me up for life for mathematics, because mathematics should always, without exception, be taught basic math. You have your addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, and then you go into geometry. And then algebra after geometry, because algebra is what shows you how to understand the concepts within geometry, and then you get into calculus and then trigonometry.
Right, because you have to have the foundation of abstract thinking.
Exactly, and you have to understand where algebra comes from and why all of these concepts are so, and by them giving me algebra before geometry, it really messed me up. And at that point, I completely lost all understanding of mathematics, which I really enjoyed when I was in elementary school. So now we're going to get on to rhetoric, which is the third part of the trivium. And there's good and bad rhetoric. I know a lot of people who hear the word rhetoric and or even logic, they think of Spock and go, no, not logic. You know, but rhetoric.
And you know, it doesn't that say something in and of itself that people have such an aversion to logic? I'm a big fan of logic. I you know, intellectual logic.
And the irony of it all is that the author of the first episode of Twilight Zone, he wrote that too, of Star Trek, is George Clayton Johnson, and he's a good friend of mine. he and I are actually working on a film together with Richard Grove. With Richard Grove and Paul Verge to teach the trivium.
Mm-hmm.
Now, rhetoric provides the how of a subject, and rhetoric is also applying knowledge and understanding, which comprises wisdom, or in other words, it is systematically usable knowledge and understanding to explore and find proper choice of methods for cogently expressing the conclusions of grammar and logic on a subject in writing and or oral argumentation or oratory. The enunciation of those conclusions is called the statement of rationale, the set of instructions deduced from the rationale for the purpose of application of those conclusions is the real world, real world is called a statement of protocols.
Okay.
So this in and of itself is, as a whole, is the trivium. The grammar, logic, rhetoric, always in that specific order. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to just skip forward to the quadrivium for a minute. And then what I want to do is come back and then go into some of the logical fallacies here. And I also want to cover some other topics today. So I'm going to have to cover some of these quickly.
Well, what I'd like to do is give everybody the basics. And then I'd like to revisit this again sometime in the future and go into a little bit more detail. But go ahead into the quadrivium so we understand what we're talking about. The quadrivium referring to math, geometry, music, and astronomy.
Right. So like you said, the quadrivium is arithmetic, geometry, music, and astronomy. It's always in that specific order. Now, the reason why it's in that order is that the quadrivium pertains to matter and quantity, the advanced four. Mathematics is number in itself, which is a pure abstraction or outside of space and time. Geometry is number in space. Music or harmonic theory is number in time. And astronomy is number in space and time. So these have to be taught in order for people to gain understanding of the how the world around them works. Now, we were talking at the beginning of the episode about mind control and media manipulation and these things, and it's important for us to go into that now. And I mentioned the quote by Tolstoy about the printing press being a mighty engine for disseminating ignorance. I should also state, and I alluded to it earlier, that literacy is a form of slavery until a systematic form of critical thinking is practiced by the reader. And Edward Bernays, who was the father of propaganda, in his 1928 book, on the first paragraph of chapter one, states, quote, "The conscious and intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in a democratic society. Those who manipulate this unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of our country."
Control the knowledge, control the people.
"We are governed, our minds molded, our tastes formed, our ideas suggested, largely by men we've never heard of. This is a logical result," and this is they're putting logic before grammar, so they're mixing things up, and they've created this elitist, you know, we're better than everybody else nonsense that they've got, right? These eugenicist type of attitude. So this is the logical result in the way in which our democratic society is organized. See, what they've had to do to organize it that way was to dumb the masses down to elevate themselves.
And this is being done by teaching these things, but by teaching them out of order purposely. And this is the result.
Out of order or not providing them at all, right?
The general argument would be, I think, from people that we do learn math, geometry, music, and astronomy in school, but it's the way in which it's being taught that's the problem.
and it's taught out of order. It's not taught in context for understanding. Like, let's say if your teacher, when you were learning what nouns and verbs and adjectives and things were, if your teacher walked you outside one day and said, okay, today we're going to learn nouns, tree, noun, car, noun, bird, noun, sidewalk, noun, you would get that right away. There's no messing around with it. Now, the next day, your teacher walks outside and says, okay, today we're going to learn verbs, running, flying, jumping, bouncing, all of these types of ideas. Then suddenly, kids have a solid foundation of what these things are. But, you know, teachers don't teach us things so simply. So, you know, many people in your audience will hear how that was just explained and they'll go, oh my God, that's the easiest way I could ever explain these things to my kid who's been struggling with this stuff in the school system for the last 6 months, right? So it's that simple to walk a child outside and to show them a few things, and 20 minutes later they understand it forever. You know, so continuing on with Edward Bernays' quote, this is the logical result in which the way in which our democratic society is organized. Vast numbers of human beings must cooperate in this manner, by dumbing us down, of course, if they are to live together as a smoothly functioning society. See, this is ridiculous right here, and this is why Edward Bernays' book is propaganda, right? Because he's using propaganda to sell these very concepts to other elitists to dumb us down. In almost every act of our daily lives, whether in the sphere of politics or business, in our social conduct or our ethical thinking, we are dominated by the relatively small number of persons who understand the mental processes and social patterns of the masses. See, the mental processes is simply removing the trivium so that they can't think critically, right? It is they who pull the wires which control the public mind, and they do this through the media, through video games, through movies and things like that, but we'll cover it more. The idea is, you know, to limit it. Like with my son, I don't limit him watching movies per se. I do make sure that he doesn't get TV commercials and these things. It's a very fine line to walk, and I'm not comfortable with it either way, but I do feel like a tyrant at times if I don't allow him any movies or something like that on occasion, because I like to watch movies sometimes too. So what we have to do is we have to install a mental antivirus system so that when we do watch these things, we're using it to learn. So as soon as we've installed this mental antivirus system, when we watch TV or a movie or something, we automatically begin to spot all of the fallacies and things and say, oh, now I get
to. So we can filter the information critically and extrapolate what could possibly be learned from it.
Right.
I mean, because obviously, even watching videos online, if I take that and watch a TV burn it and watch it on my television, I'm technically watching TV. I watch something on nature about cheetahs with my 6-year-old son because he's interested in cheetahs.
Right.
Clearly, we're watching TV, but there is a clear difference between watching that. But, you know, I mean, even with that, you can't just spend your entire day watching TV and saying, hey, I'm learning. This is how I'm learning.
Well, let me just add that the trivium is a systematic method for deriving certainty with the world around you, with data coming in via the five senses. It really refutes Kantian philosophy, Kant, what we call contradictions. Kant was basically you create an idea in your head and then that's reality, right? And it's just completely absurd. Instead of going out and allowing the information that's coming in through the five senses, systematically fact-checking it, making sure that you can repeat those conclusions before you speak it to anyone else. Kant would just blurt out some wild idea that he had in his head and then call it reality. So today we're dealing with all kinds of contradictions that have really inundated the universities, even, you know, quantum physics. I had David Harriman on my show recently, and we went into all of this information on this very topic, so, you know, your listeners can get into that. I also want to go into a couple more quotes here really quickly. Walter Lippmann said, quote, "We have learned to call this propaganda. A group of men who can prevent independent access to the event, can arrange the news to suit their purpose. In order to conduct a propaganda campaign, there must be some barrier between the public and the event. Access to the real environment must be limited before anyone can create a pseudo environment he thinks wise, or desirable? And this is from Public Opinion 1922. B.F. Skinner, the famous guy who created the Skinner box to put pigeons and rats in to study human development, Skinner said, "Give me a child and I'll shape him into anything." Okay. And then let me give you a quote from Sir Thomas More from his book Utopia from the 16th century. He says, quote, "For if you, the rulers, suffer your people to be ill-educated and their manners to be corrupted from their infancy, and then punish them for those crimes to which their first education disposed them, what else is to be concluded from this but that you first make thieves and outlaws and then punish them?"
Well, there you have it. Right?
I think so. I think that last quote summarizes it quite well, you know, because he's answering to the three previous quotes that I mentioned from Bernays, Lippmann, and Skinner. You know, what this is all, what they're all doing is there's this ancient thing that Plato talked about called the noble lie. And this is basically the elites have this lie between themselves going and, or, but not between themselves, that they feed to the masses to run the masses, but then they have a whole different system of books and everything that they run on. This is known as the noble lie. You know, we talk about this in Paul Verge, Richard Andrew Grove, and I released a documentary last year, last November, called What You've Been Missing, Episode 1, Exposing the Noble Lie. And
people, yeah, we have that on our Facebook page right now. I highly recommend that, as a matter
yes,
of fact.
Yes, and people can also go to the Gnostic Media website and click on the videos link, and they'll find it there as well. And it explains how this information that I'm providing is used for mind control and things like that. People have to understand that the only way that the trivium or any occult information can be used against you is by you not knowing it. See, you have to unoccult something, and the definition of education is to unoccult, is to unhide. So the only way that the occult can be used against you is if you unhide it, you uncover it. So, you know, I hear so many people that if you say, you know, something about the Kabbalah or whatever, they freak out and they run from it. Oh, that's devil worship. Well, that's exactly that type of fear that enables it to be used against the person.
Right. That's your conditioning. They want you to be afraid of it. They want you to be closed off from it.
And the more you're afraid of it, the more you run away from it, the more you're reacting with fear, and the more they're controlling you because of it.
Right. And you know what, Jan? This is the problem I have. This is a very, very prevalent concept nowadays, it goes into a very new agey kind of concept, which I don't really jive with because I find it to defy intellect. And these are the things that annoy me when somebody defies intellect. But I think that intellect is just a lost thing in people lately. And I think that's what irritates me so much. And, you know, I'm not really an unhappy person. I don't want to make it sound like I'm irritable all the time. But what bothers me is when you have people say, well, if you just ignore that, then it won't bother you in your life, or don't focus on it, don't pay attention to it. So you bring up things like the occult or the Kabbalah or whatever, and, you know, they put their proverbial hands over their ears and they say, okay, hear no evil, I'm not hearing this, it won't exist in my existence. And I'm saying, but how could you process your life? How could you make decisions? How could you make informed decisions about your life and about what you do without the information?
Exactly. Well, this is what we call, what's the word for it? Ignorance, right? That's ignorance. And when you choose to ignore something, decide to ignore something, you are being ignorant.
And the argument, you know, you want to pay attention to it because it might control or influence their lives too much. And my argument to that is, are you that weak? Are you that wussified that you can't learn about something without letting it control who you are?
Right, sure. You know, and a lot of people do that. You know, it's like I often use the example, if I pick up, like, I have this glass of water here in front of me, I can pick up the glass, I can look at it, I can smell it, I can lick it, I can tap on it and make a sound, I can feel it and rub it, all my different senses, so that I get a feeling of what a glass is, okay? And then I put it down. I don't have to become the glass. I don't have to make the glass a religion or anything like that. I've studied the glass. I understand it. I put it down. And I make a decision whether or not I want to drink the water or whatever else is in it, right? So, you know, by people not picking things up and looking at things first, they're deciding to be ignorant. They're not using the trivium. Now, the way that the trivium is used against people is by them not having it. Now, I know this one guy who just absolutely freaks out. He lives in England, and he absolutely flips out that we're teaching people the trivium because, well, those elitists, they use it, and how could you possibly teach people? Well, the only way it can be used against you is if you don't understand how it works. And the reason why they took it away from us is to control us. Now, this goes into the word liberal. We're dealing with the classical seven liberal arts of the trivium and quadrivium. Trivium, grammar, logic, rhetoric, quadrivium, math, geometry, music, and astronomy. What does the word liberal mean? Now, the word liberal in and of itself, to keep people from figuring out what a real liberal is, has been twisted. The media turns the word into its antithesis, and they'll say that it means tax and spend liberal, or somebody who wants to take your guns and your freedom away and bring in socialist healthcare and all of this kind of stuff. These are not liberals. This is the antithesis of liberal. In fact, they could be communist or socialist would be a better word for it, right? A liberal is, by very definition, freedom. It means of or befitting the free, and it also means someone who is educated in the classical seven liberal arts. And it also is directly synonymous with the word book, Latin liber. This is where we get the word libraries from, right? So we go to libraries or we go to books to find freedom. So by the media, by the mainstream media and all these politicians and Rush Limbaugh and all these nefarious characters taking the word liberal and twisting it to its antithesis, what this does is it prevents people from discovering the true seven liberal arts because nobody wants to be a liberal.
It creates a psychological aversion.
It creates a psychological aversion, just like the fear to the Kabbalah or to anything else, right? So this is the game plan that they use to control people, to misuse the word liberal, to misuse... there was another one that I'm trying to think of off the top of my head that I'm forgetting right now.
Well, it goes back to the bastardization of the English language on purpose.
Yes, and by having a systematic method, you're able to identify the specific usage of words and things like that to get yourself out of how these things are manipulated and used against you. Now, one thing before I forget, we should go into logical fallacies because the logical fallacies empower people immediately. People can start to learn and apply the logical fallacies right now as we're talking about them. So it's very important that we cover these, and I'm just going to cover a few of them. And on the Gnostic Media website or on Trivium Education on the videos tab on the Gnostic Media website under Trivium Study or under the videos tab there as well, they can find a video there with that I did in an interview with Dr. Michael LaBosier on the logical fallacies, and that will cover it into more depth. And I highly recommend that people study that over and over. Also on the Trivium Education website, on the reading page down at the bottom, they can download a PDF of logical fallacies from Dr. LaBosier. And I also recommend that people get Leonard Peikoff's Introduction to Logic series that's also listed there. But keep in mind that Peikoff, like Rand, does have his logic and grammar out of order, and he would often come to false conclusions. So ad hominem is a fallacy that's very common. If somebody says, you're making a claim about education or about television or whatever, and somebody says, well, you know, you're just being a hyper activist or something like that. You know, this is an ad hominem. Rather than dealing with the information that you're presenting, they're blocking that out. They're creating an ad hominem or a fallacy. And a fallacy comes from the Latin word fallare, which is a lie. Okay, so they're creating a lie to attack the person rather than to deal with the information. So let's say somebody is a homosexual and they say, they come running up and they say, hey, somebody's out there. They're trying to break into this building over here and steal a bunch of stuff. And then the other, somebody else walks over, you're a fag and you're wearing a pink shirt. Why should I listen to you? What does his pink shirt and his homosexual orientation have anything to do with the building being broken into, right? It's a lie. It's a false thought. It's completely irrelevant. Appeal to authority is a common one when, somebody will say, dark matter is real, NASA says so, but you know, dark matter is actually under contention by various physicists, and as is quantum physics in and of itself. So we have to be careful on, you know, if the authority that we're choosing to reference is a real authority, and if that authority's position isn't being questioned in the first place. And the false use of an authority is also like if you say, you know, my best friend says that the moon is made of cheese, and who's your best friend? Well, he's, you know, he's I can't think of anything good. I don't want to bash on janitors, but let's say, you know, he's a janitor at the local pub. You know, so what is this janitor's expertise have to do with the moon?
Jana, I'm going to interrupt you for a second, and I want to tell you, all right, I love you right now. Can I just say that? That, and Desiree's laughing, my producer is laughing over here in the background because she knows why I'm saying that. I love you right now because that is one of my biggest pet peeves, okay? And boy, am I making myself sound pleasant by having all these pet peeves. But I promise you, I'm really a very happy person. See, this happens so often. And I'm realizing now that people have been conditioned to do this because they've been learning things backwards, basically.
Yes.
Way to put it. People do this all the time and they throw out these facts and they just talk and their lips just flap and they just say things and they pull things out of the air and they write whole books on it. And I read the books and I listen to them speak and I'm saying, what is this idiot saying? They're not saying anything. But
exactly.
People are hanging on every word and people are like, oh, but you know, and then they say, well, I know this because so-and-so said so. And I'm saying, great, who's so-and-so? And then they look at me with a stare and then, well, you know, this doesn't really matter. Of course it matters. Of course it matters. Where are you getting your information? You have to trace it back to the source. What is the basis?
Verify it, right. Go back to the grammar and verify the parts. That's exactly right.
Kids writing whole thesis papers without any kind of like backing up. I get myself excited over books that provide information, that provide sources. And that's why these kind of things make me so happy. And I appreciate connecting with this kind of mindset. And you're talking about this and I'm smiling and my producer's smiling because she knows where I'm going with it. And that's why I'm saying,
you know, well, you know, I speak with doctors and professors all the time, not only from my show, but doing research and things. And I come across, you know, Harvard, Yale graduated professors all the time that put logical conclusions before gathering data. And you'll present the data, you present the data, and they'll actually refuse to look at it and say, oh, well, that's propaganda. You know, that's like a judge saying that he knows how to judge a case before he's heard it. It's insane. Would anybody in their right mind ever want to walk into a courtroom in front of a judge who refuses to hear your case before he decides on it? Of course not. And that's the idiocy of people that put their logic, their conclusions before checking the information.
Exactly. And we're being made insane. And, you know, these people that consider themselves so, you know, enlightened and free or whatever, are going around touting this stuff. And, you know, some of these names are big out there. And I'm sure you've seen these men and women out there that are toting this stuff. And, you know, I'm over here thinking about this and you try to argue and they say,
you're not being positive.
Yeah, I'm not being positive, and intellect is overrated. We're all being turned into these little Manchurian candidates.
The positive thinking movement is also a systematic form of mind control. Positive thinking is not balanced thinking. You have to look, you know, it doesn't matter if something is negative or positive. You know, the truth is what is important. You don't just block out something because it happens to be negative. You know, if it's negative, you need to face it and deal with it and find out the truth.
And make a choice. Exactly. How do you have control over your own life if you're not able to make a choice?
So let's go back to some more of these logical fallacies. And there's a number of just the appeal to fallacies. So I want to cover some of these just really quickly. We already mentioned the appeal to authority. There's appeal to belief, which is really common. If you don't do this, if you don't do X, God is going to come down and kick your ass, right? Appeal to common practice or appeal to tradition is very, very common. You know, my family's always done it this way, so that's how we're going to do it. Or my religion has always done it this way. Appeal to emotion is a very common one. One of Obama's favorite fallacies is the appeal to emotion. Also, appeal to fear is very common. We have to go after Osama bin Laden hiding in this cave in Afghanistan, because if we don't, he's going to row a canoe over and attack us, even though, you know, there's no, even though that Osama was paid for by the U.S. government in the first place and trained and everything else. So we get into, you know, then there's appeal to flattery. Your boss comes in the morning and says, "Hi, Lorette, that's a really nice dress today and a really great looking new haircut you just got. You must be ready to make $1 million today. Yeah, I know you're going to do great on the job today." Or there's appeal to novelty, which that was one of Terrence McKenna's favorite fallacies in his time wave zero theory. Appeal to pity, appeal to popularity. Hey, if you drink this beer, you're going to get all these pretty brunettes with the blue eyes, and you know you're going to get this nice car. Or you know, if you get this nice car, you're going to have all of these women and friends and all of this stuff. You know, car salesman techniques. Or, you know, commercial techniques. And most commercials in their 30 seconds will run the full gamut of logical fallacies. So this is why it's important to understand the fallacies when we watch corporate media, because they are in their television shows and in their commercials and everything. They are using these fallacies as systematic forms of mind control against you.
So the idea is to be able to understand what you're seeing and
exactly.
filter out.
And so what we're doing right now, what we're doing right now by learning these fallacies is we're taking them from implicit knowledge. I was at the used car dealership yesterday and I got a funny feeling from the guy that he wasn't telling the truth. You know, this funny feeling in my stomach. And I just don't know if I trust the guy versus, well, you know, I just got back from the used car dealership and he used an appeal to popularity, an appeal to emotion, an appeal to authority. You know, he did this, you know, he you know, made a hasty generalization, misleading vividness and all these different fallacies. And so you have explicit knowledge of exactly how you were lied to. Okay, so this is why it's so important for at the education level, at the very foundation of growing our minds, to corrupt this information so that the media, so that the politicians and the lawyers and the marketing companies, so that they can use this information against us. Because guess what? When we all had it, none of the current advertising and stuff would work. If you look at magazine advertisements from the 1800s, for instance, if you look at an old Sears catalog, you'll see that Sears describes the apparatus and explains exactly what it does. There's no hype. There's no, you know, sexy girl, you know, rubbing her boobie there, like, you know, buy this product. it's gonna make your penis grow or something like that. You know, it's just, you know, completely ridiculous stuff that if you understand logic and critical thinking, all of this stuff that they use in the media today to advertise to us wouldn't work, okay?
So now we have, excuse me for one second, Jan, now we have this entire society that appears to me, based on what you're saying, my observation, it appears that our entire culture is a culture based on implicit decision-making and implicit behavior versus what they should be, how they should be behaving, and that's based on explicit explanations, okay? So we have this entire society that seems to fall more on this paradigm, on the side of implicit. Of course, going along with that, there's this whole New Age kind of philosophy, and it's not only New Age, it's a lot of spirituality is moving in this direction where they're basing their lives on feeling rather than thought. And I'm going to feel my way through life and I'm going to go with my instincts and I'm going to go with how I feel about it. Now, sometimes your feeling is legitimate and your feeling is adequate. But the problem is that you're not wondering why you're feeling this way and you're not matching the...
Let me interrupt you, because what you've just explained is systematic of many of my friends, especially out in the LA area. And, you know, like I had one friend who used to be an activist, and then all of a sudden, you know, he said one day, well, I got tired of all these negative thoughts and I just want to be positive and, you know, just go with what feels good. Right. So whatever feels good is right.
Why doesn't it feel good to know?
You know, it doesn't feel good to know truth or to understand how things work.
That makes me feel so damn good. I don't understand why people aren't as high as
you know,
I am.
So what happens, though, is by not having any implicit knowledge and just by going on a funny feeling, these people are easily controlled and manipulated. You can tell them anything that feels good and they'll believe it because they have no systematic method for verifying their thoughts. Whatever fuzzy, warm feeling pops up into their head. They take it as truth, and then they go spread that to other people. Like, oh, well, the reason that, you know, it was aliens or UFOs that built the pyramids or built anything, or, you know, anything that we don't have current understanding of or have forgotten our own human knowledge of, it automatically gets cast on to, you know, extraterrestrials or, you know, interdimensional, you know, orbs or something ridiculous. And, you know, there's never, when I have heard these people give lectures and stuff at these New Age conferences, they never have any substantiation or citations or anything where they got this stuff. They say, well, you know, it was a funny feeling. I had a premonition. Well, what did you verify it with? Well, I didn't. It was a premonition. You know, and it's like, so you've not used anything to verify this idea in reality. No deductive knowledge, which is the opposite of inductive. See, inductive knowledge, you take specifically what's coming in from the five senses and you make an idea like, okay, my five senses show me that these 10 dogs in front of me wag their tails, or I'm working at a dog pound and I can see these 100 dogs all wag their tails when they're happy. They all stop wagging when they're upset. So therefore, I'm going to imply that all dogs, when they're happy, wag their tails, right? And that's implicit knowledge, which is how the laws of physics were developed. Or not inductive, excuse me. I said that wrong. Inductive knowledge, not implicit knowledge. That's inductive knowledge. Now, deductive knowledge is when you have an idea and you say, okay, well, I'm at least going to deduce from the things around me if I can see if this has any confirmation in reality, okay? And if there's no confirmation of anything, either inductively or deductively, then this is known as arguing the arbitrary with no evidence. You have to discard it. You know, see, all that funny feeling should do, all that, you know, that idea should do is to trigger you to start processing grammar, logic, and rhetoric to verify the facts of reality. You know, you shouldn't stop on that funny feeling is the truth of reality. So, you know, there's more fallacies that I want to cover here. Begging the question is a very common one. Let's say somebody is saying that the Bible is the word of God. And you say, well, how do you know the Bible is the word of God? And then they say, well, it says right here in the Bible that the Bible is the word of God. Okay, so this is circular logic or begging the question. You can't use the same source to prove your point. You know, if we go out into nature, and we see things out of nature. I see a tree, I see the sky, I see clouds, I see plants, I see birds, I see cats and deer and raccoons and animals. These are things that I know came from quote unquote God. If I see a car, a house, a book, a driveway, a street, a wall, these are things that I know, my computer screen, my keyboard, my microphone, my glass, these are things that I know came from man. So, you know, there's no contradictions in nature. Nature doesn't have contradictions. Man does. So nature doesn't write books, okay? Man writes books, and man puts in there so that they can gain their own agenda for controlling others that God wrote their book, okay? That's how that kind of thing works. There's so many more good ones. I want to get into the middle ground or the middle of the road fallacy. That's another common one that many people use. You have, let's say, person A presents one side and side A, and side A is the correct answer. Then somebody else doesn't like the correct answer, and they haven't done their grammar, and they come up and they say, you know, person B says, well, I'm going to choose this complete point that's on the opposite side of the spectrum. Now, a politician will come in and say, well, you know, we have to be accommodating for everybody, so let's just take the middle of the road. Well, person A was the only one who gave the right answer. If person B gave the wrong answer, then what happens if we take the middle of the road? We're settling on an illogical conclusion that has no basis in reality. So this is the middle of the road fallacy. There's a hasty generalization fallacy where if I say, you know, all gays are Democrats, well, that would be a hasty generalization because you're leaving out the log cabin Republicans or whatever they're called. So, you know, you have to be careful that you're not using a hasty generalization or not using enough of the information coming in. Another very common fallacy that politicians and many people love to use, but politicians are very proud of this fallacy, red herring fallacy. Now, let's say if I ask a politician a question, are you supporting the Zionist agenda and OPEC, you know, or AIPAC and these different organizations? And he says, well, you know, let me tell you about a story when I was a little boy on a fishing trip.
It's a diversion.
And where the term red herring comes from is back in the old days, or probably even today, when they would train hunting dogs to go after the hound, when the hound was about ready to be graduated from dog training, what they would do to test the dog, they would release the fox and then have the hound go after the fox, and then they would take a fish and they would drag it across the hound's or the fox's trail to see if they could divert the hound onto the trail of the fish. So this is what people are doing when they use this tactic. A straw man fallacy is another common one. Let's say I present an argument, okay? All right, so the straw man is very, very common. Person A has position X. Person B presents position Y, which is a distorted version of position X. And then person B attacks position Y, and then therefore position X is false or incorrect. See, what you're doing is you're setting up a straw man, okay? A corporation is a straw man, for instance. It's a fake human. It's designed to act and function for the corporation like a real human being might, but it's not a real human being. It's a straw man. So it's set up to look like the real thing. So what we're doing is I'm stating any argument, and then person B comes along and creates an argument very similar to mine, almost identical to mine, but they change a few key details to make it completely distorted with false conclusions. Then they attack that, and then they try and get everybody to think that my argument is false because they presented a bogus argument.
Can you tell us again where we can find more information about what you're talking about and more information about Trivium so we can get a better grasp of it? And then I'm going to be interviewing Jarrett Sanchez, who is going to talk to us a little bit more about, now that we understand what Trivium is, practical application. So my purpose is to walk my listeners through understanding Trivium and then applying it in practical ways with their kids and teaching them in this way and helping them learn in this way. So give us a quick reminder of where we can find more information. Then I have a couple of questions for you before we wrap it up.
My main website for the Trivium is triviumeducation.com, TRIVIUM education.com, probably .net or .org would get you there too. And then my main website for everything is gnosticmedia.com, and that's gnosticmedia.com, and all of this information and my interviews and everything, my podcast is on that website, as well as the books that I've written.
All right. Now, in my understanding and in my opinion, I guess I can call it an opinion, we have Trivium here, which is a way of training your mind to absorb, process, filter, and utilize information and stimulus that is in our environment in a more useful way so that we can make informed decisions instead of compulsive decisions. And the reason this resonates so deeply with me is because I'm all about unplugging from the compulsory paradigm that I feel that most of us in society are locked into, and we've been conditioned to be in this paradigm. I do not feel that it is a natural state for a human being to be in. I feel that I ended a sentence with a preposition there, case in point. I feel that what is natural for human beings is to be able to look at their environment, absorb the information, learn about it, and then make informed decisions. I think that this is the way that we were all throughout history, and that ability has literally been trained out of us or conditioned out of us through indoctrinated schooling. And I do feel that it's on purpose. And I do feel that this is why school is the root of why everything has been going wrong in our society. And we can trace it back to that. That is why I urge parents everywhere to unplug from the school system and to pull away from this compulsory status quo mindset that we're stuck into and really move along in another direction. And that is why I don't necessarily advocate for any of these weird labels that are out there as far as what we're doing, whether we're unschooling or homeschooling or independent learning or whatever it is. You're just not doing school. That's all it is. And if you can get yourself back to this state of learning that's very natural and normal for a human being, which is the trivium way of learning. And that is training your mind in this way so that you can make informed decisions. Then you can truly unplug from that and break free of it. And you will be that person standing outside of the forest so that you could see the tree line for what it is. And it's nothing but twigs. You'll really be able to see this. You'll really be able to make decisions. Now, what has happened in our society is we've been indoctrinated, we've been inside this system on purpose with this schooling that has manipulated how learning should actually happen. And it's purposely taking this method of learning that you're talking about out of order, putting it in different orders, and manipulating us basically, and creating the illusion that we constantly need stimulation, we constantly need products, and it's turning us into consumers.
And
we constantly need, or we think we need, right. And we constantly think we need medications, and we constantly think we need all these things to make us feel good. It's all about feeling good, and we want to feel good, and we don't think we can without all of these other stimulations that are artificial stimulations. It has created a nation of people dependent upon artificial stimulation to feel good, not realizing that they do not have to follow that paradigm. It trains us for limited knowledge on purpose and makes us more vulnerable to media. That is my opinion, and I want to know what your thoughts are on it. Now, that is implicit. It is not explicit. But I'm going to go ahead and let you school me on that, Jan.
Yes, you're right. It is a systematic dumbing down. It's taking people's self-esteem away from their ability to make valid decisions in their life. And without the ability to make valid decisions, with understand reality for what it is and how their own brains function, then they, you know, go to their doctors and they'll ask for drugs, you know, Ritalin or Prozac, or whatever the case may be. You know, my child isn't normal. He can't learn because I'm giving him too much sugar and red food coloring and high fructose corn syrup, and he can't sit down in class. These are all things that are, this whole situation in our society is because people cannot think critically. And the elites have even bought into their own false use of the trivium. I don't even think the elites, for the most part, obviously some of them do, but I don't think most of them even have it right anymore either. You know, they eventually, their later generations start buying into their own lies, and not having the trivium in the proper order themselves, they can't understand how society really functions. So yeah, it's an epidemic. It's a major problem. It's a global problem. And the only way that we're going to be able to fix it is to return critical thinking in a systematic method of the trivium, grammar, logic, and rhetoric, back to the people. Now, if you don't have the trivium in that specific order, you can have we're all sort of born with a light ability for critical thinking. But if you don't have a systematic critical method of critical thinking installed in your brain that you understand exactly how it works, then you really don't have critical thinking. You know, there's the kind that you're born with, and then there's the kind that you know that you developed, that you installed in your own brain, that you understand how it works, and that you know how exactly the process that you went from point A to point B to derive a conclusion from the information. Input, process, output. If you mix, you know, how do you get output before input? How do you process before, you know, input? Input, process, output. Grammar, logic, rhetoric. That's how it works. That's how it has to be.
And, you know, when you say it in that way, it's so profoundly simple that it's extraordinary, if that makes any sense. Now, Jan, I'm going to have Jared Sanchez on in a few weeks, and we're going to ask him for some practical application advice. In other words, this is the good news part of the show. Parents are listening and they're saying, you know what, I got it. I agree with you. I'm there 100%, but this is all new to me. Where do I start? How do I get started? And, you know, I'm going to tell you right now, audience, that we're going to have someone on that's going to walk you through some of the practical application steps. But before I let you go, Jan, we have some comments from our producer, and I just want to ask you to close the show. And before we move to Desiree, We have our listeners and they're listening and they're saying, I get it, I understand it, but this is just the tip of the iceberg. I want to know more. I want to absorb this as much as I can. And I really want to understand this before I listen to the next interview with Jared Sanchez. What's my next step? Where do I find more information that I can really begin to absorb and understand the
All right.
concept
well, they,
here?
I have for the last year and a half been putting together the triviumeducation.com website. It's got audio up there. Both Jared and I learned from Gene Odinning. Jared learned it through my show with Gene originally in October of 2009. And all of the original talks with Gene Odinning are up on that website. There's also a video version of them up there. They can download study notes up there. There's a reading page up there with various books. Now, people will notice that most of the books on the Trivium listed up there on the website have it out of order. There was a nun, Sister Miriam Joseph, that wrote the best book out there on the Trivium, and she herself had it out of order. That's why she was still a nun. She didn't know how to derive or gather her data before she made conclusions, so she put her logic of religion conclusion first and then worked around that and put logic first. So, but unfortunately, at present, there is no better book on the Trivium out there. There's various projects in the works right now, but it's going to be several years before they're in print. So people have to understand that what's out there is out of order, and just understand it that way and study it anyway and put it back in the proper order. Also, the Trivium, the study of the Trivium, many out there are, you know, they call it the classical Christian education. Well, the Trivium doesn't belong to any religion. In fact, it came before Christianity. So there is no, in reality, there, you know, well, what they've done is they've taken, well, it's a deviation. They've taken it out of order, and then they'll tell people not to study certain things that would make them question their own religious beliefs. Well, you know, but see, here's the point is you don't kill the messenger. All of these people, even if they're teaching it out of order and have their own agenda, use the Trivium in the proper order to see through the agendas and get the information that's valid from them and disregard the rest.
Okay. Fair enough. All right, Jan, we have some comments from our producer, Desiree. Desiree, what do you think about Trivium? Is this nonsense or what?
Yeah, lots of nonsense. Hi, Jan.
I'm just kidding, Jan.
I'm just kidding. Hi. Actually, I wanted to, first of all, thank you for coming on because you really are the perfect guest in the sense that this is what this show is about, is to challenge the audience. And I know for a fact that a lot of the parents, I don't want to say a lot, but a lot of the parents are going to be a little uncomfortable listening to what you have to say, because if you're familiar in any way with the home ed circle, the philosophies are a little shocking sometimes. So I really appreciate you coming on because you're giving the parents a lot to think about. And we had discussed this before coming on the show. We were discussing when I asked you to come on the show, for example, watching television, letting children watch television, not challenging children, not encouraging children. You know, it just there's a lot of misguidance, perhaps.
Yeah, misunderstanding.
Misunderstanding of what it means to unplug.
Misconception. Yeah, well, because
you.
They take the idea of unplugging and they say, well, I'm unplugged because I don't go to school.
Because
and
I don't go to
I'm
school.
I'm so free and I'm so...
Well, but, you know, if that person doesn't have a systematic method, they're still just as easily mind-controlled and manipulated.
Well, that's exactly what I'm seeing. I'm seeing that you're unplugging from one system. Okay, so you're not
and
going
you're plugging
to school,
into
but you
a
are
trend.
Completely plugging into another dogma, another trend, another quote-unquote expert, and whatever they say, you're going to apply to your family and your philosophy without actually thinking about it. And so that's why I'm really glad that you came on the show, because I know for a fact you're going to challenge
you know what?
And
there's one, a lot of parents. There's one thing I want to mention before I forget, and we might want to go into this maybe on another show sometime, but I know a lot of parents out there are into video games, and there's a very good article that I highly suggest people read from, if I can remember, it's at... it's at cracked.com is where the article is found, but it's called, if people, you know, and it'll come right up if people Google it, 5 creepy ways video games are trying to get you addicted. And if people read that, and also in, I mentioned in November, 2010, Richard Andrego, Paul Verge, and I, along with James Corbett of the Corbett Report, we put out What You've Been Missing, Episode 1, Exposing the Noble Lie. And we cover a lot more of how media and video games are used to mind control and manipulate the population.
I have actually, this is just a funny story, but this is what I mean about maybe you're not familiar with the crazy homemade world that we're in. But it's really a hot topic. Things like television viewing, media, video games. I have been.
Well, the thing is, just a second. I want to make this point clear. The thing that I've been able to observe, and you know, because this is what I do, Jan. This is what we do. We don't make a decision before we observe and we think about the information. We process the information, and based on these things, based on what I've seen, it's what I've seen. It's very clear to me that you have people on one side of the spectrum who could care less. Okay, you play video games, you don't play video games, who cares? And then you have people all the way on the other side of the continuum that are staunchly in favor of it, to the point where they will proverbially slap you in the wrist if you say that you prefer not to play video games in your house, and they defend it staunchly. And what they're actually doing is trying to stroke their own ego and validate their own insecurities about
their
decisions.
You know what? Here's my opinion. Plug the Trivium in before you do video games or media, and then you can use them safely. You know, that's my suggestion.
Right. Right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. But go ahead, Desiree.
I think you took the words right out of my mouth. No, but I was going to say basically just thank you, because I know that the parents out there really need to listen to what you have to say.
There's a time and a place, and that's okay. But the idea, and this is why I say the Trivium resonates with me when I started to learn about it, is because we're already there. That's what we do. My children, as young as they are sitting in front of the TV, and as silly as the show is that they may be watching, they already have the base knowledge, and they already have this critical thought in place that they can watch this, and it has its place, and they understand it, and they're able to put it through their filter and not be
if kids have the Trivium installed, you know, or they're at least learning it, you know, what parents can do is have a fun time with watching TV. Okay, children, sit down. Today we're going to study fallacies by watching TV commercials, or by watching the corporate news, or by watching President Obama's speech. You can turn it into a fun learning experience and learn your grammar, logic, and rhetoric by understanding how this stuff works, and then just turn it into a game of identifying this stuff. Like if you're sitting there and listening to radio commercials in between breaks or something, I mean, turn those commercials into something fun that you can learn from. And, you know, it's the commercials in and of themselves are worthless, but if you take it and learn it, you know, and turn it as a tool for studying logical fallacies and the Trivium, then suddenly you can take something that's complete sophist nonsense and turn it into a valuable learning tool.
Right. When you're able to pick out the fact that it's sophist nonsense and not something, you know, because I will personally say that I do not agree that learning to read with this kind of artificial stimulation is a proper way of learning to read. Reading the classics and reading books that have actual substance and value and that are written well and that demonstrate the proper use of the English language, this is a valuable way of learning to read, not in short bursts through texting. I don't believe that a child should be learning to read through IMing on Yahoo.
Probably not.
No, that's the thing there, you know. I mean, yes, my kids do IM with their friends, but I don't pretend that they're learning grammar in this way, because they are not. We're learning grammar when we're reading together as a family, or they're reading their books.
Right.
So there you go. And there you have it. And that's it. I'm done. I'm spent. I have said all I have to say. All right. Jan, stay on the line just a second. This is Lorette Lynn, the Unplugged Mom. I have successfully talked everyone out of their comfort zone. Right? Right, folks? Right, audience? You're all going to go ahead and find out more about the Trivium now, because you are intellects. My audience is made up of very intelligent people, very intelligent parents, very intelligent men and women, very passionate. and you know, you're out there and you want to make a change, you want to see society change, you want to do the right thing, you want to do the right thing by your kids, you know that something is terribly wrong out there, you truly want to unplug, and that's why you so much appreciated this show. You loved hearing from Jan, you applaud me for having him on. That's my ego talking there, right? Desiree's making faces over here.
But it works.
And you're going to go ahead and you are going to check out the Trivium Education with Jan Irvin. We're going to have his information posted along with this podcast, and you're going to let us know if you have any questions. Thank you so much for listening and for allowing me the opportunity to unplug you and talk you out of your comfort zone. Don't forget to check out www.unpluggedmom.com. That's unpluggedmom.com. We have a plethora of valuable information there. This is Laurette Lynn saying bye-bye. Take you away.